Welcome to another Colts Daily Update on Colts.com.
All right, you've made it, or at least you're close. Depending on when you're listening to this, have a good weekend coming up. Welcome to the Friday Colts Daily Update. I'm Matt Taylor on Colts.com, the Colts mobile app, iTunes, and on TuneIn. A lot going on. College basketball winding down. It's the last weekend of the Big Ten season, which is just ridiculous. IU takes on Ohio State tonight in senior night down in Bloomington. Purdue plays Minnesota, I believe, this weekend. The Pacers get back on the court tonight against the Atlanta Hawks following the All-Star break. The Pacers are a playoff team. I mean, they absolutely are a playoff team, and they could improve their seeding with a strong close to the season, which I think is in store. We're talking Colts, though. That's why you came. On Thursday, we talked with the offensive and defensive coordinators. Hope you enjoyed that. Nick Sirianni and Matt Eberflus. Check that out if you missed that on Thursday. Today, though, we're talking about, to start off with, Adam Vinatieri re-signing with the Colts, remaining in Indianapolis as the kicker. The greatest of all time. The Colts locking him down before free agency really even started. And we've got an interview up right now on Colts.com with Adam. And he said that this process was significantly easier than the last time he hit free agency, which tells you, you know, how much of a priority he was for Chris Ballard. And this was a slam dunk move as Vinatieri gets ready for his 23rd season, 23rd season in the NFL and his 13th in Indianapolis. I mean, Adam Vinatieri continues to defy his age. Father Time continues to produce at a high level. I mean, you could argue that Vinatieri has had his best years coming after turning 40. I mean, over the past five seasons, he's only missed 17 field goals, 17 misses out of 163 tries, and that includes 23 out of 29, 16, or I should say 6 of the 17 misses are from at least 50. 23 of 29 from at least 50 yards, and I think that's what is most impressive to me. He's not losing anything on long field goals. I mean, oftentimes you see as guys get older, kickers get older, they lose distance, but they maintain the accuracy. But, I mean, Vinatieri has increased both. I mean, if Vinatieri doesn't make some clutch long field goals over 50 yards, the Colts don't win a lot of games the last couple of seasons. And you can definitely say that about last season. I mean, the Colts only won 4 games in 2017, and it's fair to say that that number would have been lower if Vinatieri doesn't make some long clutch field goals. So, I mean, you look at the numbers from last season, 29 out of 34, and you mean the only reason he missed 5 was because the Colts played in awful, atrocious weather the last 2 road games of the season. He missed a couple of field goals in a blizzard in Buffalo, which I'm still cold from, by the way, and then a 60-yard field goal in Baltimore, I think right before the end of the half. He had the distance on that, but then the rain and the wind picked up right at the last second and knocked it no good. So it really impressive, again, after turning 40 years old. I mean, you go back to 2014, didn't miss at all that season until week 17, made 44 field goals in a row. That's an NFL record from the beginning of 2015 until the end of 2016. You know, as far as other people in the NFL, people in different markets, how they view Adam Vinatieri. You know, some people will still, when they hear Adam's name, still picture him in a Patriots uniform. You know, those game-winning kicks in the Super Bowl for New England. You know, the NFL films, the slow motion shots with the confetti coming down and the fist pumps and the high fives. But in reality now, Vinatieri's been a Colt longer than he was a Patriot. 13 years now in Indy and 10 years for the Patriots, and his 4 Super Bowl titles are the second most ever, behind only Charles Haley, who we talked about a few weeks ago on the radio show, and Tom Brady, and both of those guys won 5. As you kind of turn the page on free agency and you look ahead to next season as far as Vinatieri is concerned, what's on the horizon for him is, personally, he's only 57 points behind Morton Anderson on the NFL's all-time points list. And, you know, he could track that down by midseason if all goes well. You know, if the Colts offense is in full gear. He's also 7 kicks made shy of breaking Anderson's record of 565 career field goals. And he could knock that down by week 4 or 5, again, if all goes well. So I know he's a kicker, But you can't knock the longevity in the NFL. You cannot knock the work ethic and what it takes for Vinatieri to be able to stay in the league and continue to produce at the high level that he's doing. You know, I mean, he's told that story often about how Bill Parcells, you know, wanted to cut him or was close to cutting him in his rookie season, but made a big kick late in the season to stick around and then just kept sticking around and eventually turned himself into one of the better kickers in the league on an annual basis. I mean, you look at the games played, 337 games played in the NFL. That's good for fifth all time. And you got to appreciate Adam Vinatieri because we just saw Sebastian Janikowski, you know, another aging kicker, one of those guys that's still going to be regarded as one of the best of all time. He just got released by the Raiders. You know, that was one of the first things that John Gruden did was make that move. And Janikowski is significantly younger than Adam Vinatieri. Seabass is only 39, and Vinatieri will turn 46 next season in December. And in the process, he'll be just the fourth player ever to play at the age of 46, joining George Blanda, Morton Anderson, and John Carney. So welcome back, Adam Vinatieri, no-brainer. First free agent brought back by Chris Ballard and the Colts this offseason. Also today, we're going to talk about the third phase of the game with new special teams coordinator Bubba Ventrone. We're also going to talk some draft coming up a little bit with a draft insider from CBSSports.com. Chris Trapasso does good work on the draft, so we're going to catch up with him in just a little bit. But Bubba first, as Bubba comes over from the New England Patriots. Yes, the Colts did get one coach to come over from New England in the offseason. Bubba had been the assistant special teams coordinator the last couple of years with the Pats, but he also was a solid special teams guy in the league himself, a young guy, not that far removed from his playing days. He's only 35 and was an undrafted player out of Villanova back in 2005. So you've got an offensive coordinator in Nick Sirianni, who's 36, and a special teams guy and Bubba Ventrone, who's 35. So some young guys on the staff. But Ventrone originally signed with New England, had two stints with the Patriots, also played for the Jets, the Browns, and then closed out his career with the 49ers back in 2013 and 2014. So it benefits Ventrone that he was coached well, but he also played well and was able to keep himself in the league for a long time as a role player on special teams. He can bring that knowledge and that ability to some of the young guys who are looking to do the same thing on the Colts roster. But he comes in highly regarded, and we talked earlier this week about what these last few weeks have been like for him coming off a Super Bowl run and then getting a big opportunity now with the Colts.
It's been up and down. You know, I just, you know, finished the season where we played pretty well, got to the Super Bowl, and unfortunately lost. And then I now joined the staff of the coach that beat us.
Right.
So I'm excited for this opportunity to be here in Indianapolis.
Yeah, what was that like for you going from trying to flush out the season, compartmentalize everything, and then taking that next step forward career-wise, you know, just days after the biggest game of the year?
You know, everything happened so fast once the Super Bowl was over. And once Coach Reich reached out to me, I was excited for a hopeful opportunity. And then when he got the job and called me, we did, you know, figured out the interview and all that.
Yeah.
It just, everything went super fast. You know, I had a vacation plan with my family because we had time off. So
where are we going to go?
They're currently on a cruise right now. And
bummer.
Thankfully, they booked me with insurance. So
there you go.
So good there. But I got down here last Wednesday and started plugging away on the roster and looking at our, you know, the guys I have to work with. So excited about this.
So you do indeed get a promotion. You are now a special teams coordinator. Has that been your goal? Was that the objective all along when you got into coaching?
Yeah. The day I took the position in New England, that was my goal.
Yeah.
I told Bill that whenever, you know, he offered it to me, and I told him that, you know, at some point, hopefully after this 3-year commitment, that I'll have an opportunity to move on. And, you know, he was supportive whenever I told him that I was going to, you know, take this position. So I think he, you know, ultimately was, you know, probably wasn't excited or thrilled that I was coming here, but, you know, he was excited for me and my success.
Is there a little bit of hesitation within the New England staff to see one of their own go to Indianapolis? Does that rivalry still exist there internally with the coaches?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. I think everything is different. Everyone has their own situations, their personal situations. I'm just really focused on doing well here and trying to, you know, make my unit the best I can be, and really trying to figure out who I'm going to be able to work with.
Yeah. You were a special team standout yourself in the NFL for 10 years. How does that help you in now your role as a special teams coordinator?
I mean, I'll say this. The one thing about, you know, being a former player is I have an understanding on, first off, the techniques that the players are, you know, asked to execute their, you know, their assignments. So I have an understanding on, you know, what is attainable, what's not. What is, you know, what is asking too much, what isn't, you know. Yeah. And I understand that in order for a player to be able to perform fast and, you know, aggressive, you have to make it simple for them. They can't be thinking too much on the run. You know, the more simple you can make it for them, the better.
Who are some guys that helped you as a special teams guy and now a coach? Who are some guys that kind of molded you into who you are and some of the principles you'll take going forward now as a coach?
You know, I learned a lot the last 3 years, you know, coaching in New England under Joe Judge,
yeah,
who is really from the Scott O'Brien tree. Most of my career I played for a guy named Brad Seeley, who's the coordinator in Houston currently. I learned a lot from Chris Tabor, who coached me in Cleveland. So I think all three of those guys, and then also Mike Westhoff briefly in New York, you know, all of those guys I've learned a lot from. And, you know, I'll be able to take bits and pieces from, you know, all four of them.
Yeah, you've worked, speaking of kickers, you've worked with some great ones the last couple of years, like you said, in New England with Steven Goskowski, and now you get to work with another great one in Adam Vinatieri. What are your thoughts on working with him, a future Hall of Famer kicker one day here with number four in mind?
I mentioned this earlier. I actually, when I was a rookie in the NFL, in 05, I signed with New England as a free agent,
uh-huh.
And Adam was still on that roster at the time, so it's kind of funny how things circle back. We talked briefly the other day. I'm excited about the opportunity to work with him and learn from him. He's obviously, you know, one of the best, if not the best, to ever do it. His ability to deliver, you know, when it counts, his leadership, you know, he'll be really good for our young specialists. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Is that going to be a weird dynamic? I mean, knowing that you were players at the same time at one point, now you're his coach. Is that going to be, you're going to have to work through that a little bit?
I think it'll be an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
I think for him, I think he's excited because he understands that, you know, I have a good understanding for, you know, the techniques of not just, you know, the special teams core and things like that, but I understand the kicking game as well, as far as, you know, kickers, punters, specialists, everything that has to go along with that. So I think he's excited for an opportunity to work with me as well.
You've watched tape, I'm sure. I know you're just getting started in the process, but I'm sure you've seen tape on Rigoberto Sanchez, the Colts punter. What are some areas that you like about his game, and how impressed were you with what he turned in his rookie season?
He did a really good job. Really good directional punter. Limited, you know, other teams' opportunities to get the ball. You know, I thought they had good gunner play last year.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that I thought the special teams unit was solid last year. So I'm excited to be able to come into a core group that doesn't have to be completely rebuilt. Yeah. You know, so I think that Tom did a pretty decent job down here last year.
Last thing before I let you go, you were an undrafted guy, and then you stayed in the NFL for 10 years. You carved out a nice little niche for yourself on special teams. Does it take a special eye for talent when it comes to special teams, because you do have that experience? You know, you can see guys when they come in, whether they be drafted guys or free agents or undrafted guys, you can kind of see them beyond their talents as a linebacker or wide receiver or whatever position they play. You can kind of see beyond that and kind of mold them into how you think they might fit in on special teams.
Yeah, I think I have a pretty good eye for young talent, and I think I do a good job of developing young players. In my first 3 years of coaching, I developed a number of guys up in New England that have that have been, you know, roster players that have contributed in big games and played in Super Bowls, and so I'm really anxious and eager to hopefully work with some good young guys, you know, that we're able to bring in here and already have on the roster.
It's Bubba Ventrone, the new man in charge on special teams with the Colts. So we've now heard from all three coordinators, who, by the way, are not only first-time coordinators with the Colts, but first-time coordinators in the NFL, along with Frank Reich, who is a first-time head coach as well. Going to finish up the podcast today. Want to sneak in a little bit of a draft conversation, do that with Chris Trapasso, who does good work for CBS, and talk about the Colts having the third pick coming up in April. Chris, thanks for the time today. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So what do you like most about the draft? Which spot is going to be the most impactful in the draft, do you think?
This is a really good class, very deep class at a few positions. The running back spot is absolutely loaded, and that's not just Saquon Barkley and Darius Geis. There's a lot of great running backs that you can get in the second, third, and fourth round. The defensive tackle spot is really good. Maurice Hurst from Michigan is probably the headliner there, but you have Daron Payne from Alabama, Vita Vea from Washington, and then there's that second, third round guys that I think can be quality players right away. The off-ball linebacker spot is very good as well. And then obviously you have the quarterback class that's probably the most hype that we've seen in the last decade. So those four or five positions, I think, are not only top-end heavy, but they also have quality depth in the second, third, and fourth rounds.
Yeah, you talked about running back. A lot of people around here with the Colts in mind picking third, they want them to draft Saquon Barkley. Let's say, for instance, the Colts pass on a running back and they're looking for another guy in the later rounds. What other running backs in this draft do you like other than Saquon Barkley?
I don't think the Colts necessarily have to draft Saquon Barkley at three first off. I really liked Marlon Mack coming out of UCF last year. He was actually my number two running back last year, just with what he can do, making defenders miss at the line of scrimmage, at the second level, and then that breakaway speed that we actually saw in some instances in his rookie year in Indianapolis for what he showed on film in college. And in terms of running backs in the second, third, fourth round, even later, Ito Smith out of Southern Mississippi didn't get invited to the combine, which was a surprise. Very productive player, both as a receiver and as a runner, has, I think, one of the best jump cuts in this entire class, and that's including Barkley and some of these top-end guys. He checks all the boxes for me. Agility, vision, production at the collegiate level. Kalen Ballage out of Arizona State, a similar player in terms of his versatility. In 2016, he was that kind of go-to offensive weapon for Arizona State. Different body type, 6'2", 222 pounds, very athletic. I think he's going to test extremely well at the combine next week, and is someone that I think kind of fits into the mold of today's NFL, that you need those running backs who can catch out of the backfield and can be good in pass protection. So those two probably stand out for me, but you can dig into the fifth and sixth round and get someone that can be that change of pace back, who can be a quality contributor right away.
All right, so what I'm hearing from you then, if it was up to you with the Colts in mind at number three, you would pick Bradley Chubb. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, that's been my most consistent mocked player to the Indianapolis Colts. I would do one of two things. I would either pick Bradley Chubb at number three, and he's almost a lock to be there at number three, just to bolster that pass rush. And you don't have to worry about him coming off the field. He's not just a pass rushing specialist. He's great against the run. He has the size and the strength to set the edge. So he's someone that's an instant impact guy that is a three down player at that defensive end spot. He would be a perfect bookend with Jabal Sheard there in Indy. I would either pick him, or I would certainly explore a little bit of a move down. I don't think the Colts should, you know, trade back into the teens or the 20s and miss on those elite prospects in this class. But if there are a few teams that are wanting to move up into the top five to get one of those highly coveted quarterbacks, moving into the sixth spot, seventh spot, eighth spot would make sense to me if they still believe that they could get Bradley Chubb or one of the premier secondary guys in this class. But I think Chubb just checks so many boxes, and you don't have to worry about any development with him. He would kind of bring back that, you know, outstanding edge rush that we saw in Indy during the Peyton Manning years.
Yeah, hasn't been since 2013 that the Colts had a legitimate threat off the edge with Robert Mathis with 19 and a half sacks that particular year. All right, let's go a different way with you, Chris. How likely is it that a team will want to trade up with the Colts to get a quarterback at pick number three?
I think it's very likely. And I think regardless of if it's Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold going number one and number two, or Baker Mayfield's in that discussion, there are four, five, maybe even six quarterbacks that could go in this first round. And I think three or four of them could go in the top 10. So you get past the Browns and the Giants. Then you have the Colts sitting there at three. The Jets are there at six. The Broncos, if they miss out on Kirk Cousins, are there at five. The Cardinals are in desperate need of a quarterback. The Bills have two first-round picks. They're going to be in the market for a quarterback. So there are certainly teams, and I would even throw the Miami Dolphins in there because Ryan Tannehill is coming off an injury, set to make a lot of money. They could save close to $20 million if they let him go. So I think they're a dark horse team that could potentially want to move up. They certainly haven't been afraid to be aggressive in free agency and the draft. So I would say it's very likely that they will have one, if not two or three teams calling them, you know, offering a pretty hefty trade compensation package to move to that very coveted number three spot. So the Colts certainly could do a lot to build their roster moving forward with extra draft picks in this draft.
Yeah, you brought up Kirk Cousins there. How does he affect, how does his free agency affect this draft? And do you think that any of these guys who are, you know, some of the top quarterbacks in the draft, are they better than Kirk Cousins, or at least do they have a higher ceiling in the short term than Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And to ask the first part, or to answer the first part of that question, I think the only way that Kirk Cousins doesn't really play in, especially to the top end of the first round, is if he lands in Minnesota with the Vikings. The Vikings have a weird quarterback situation, obviously, with Sam Bradford, Case Keenum, and Teddy Bridgewater all set to hit free agency. I do think that they will retain at least one of those guys because they've all been pretty successful under this current regime in Minnesota. But if Kirk Cousins lands in Denver, then that, I think, will make the Jets very desperate to trade up or to at least secure one of these top quarterbacks. You have the Bills. Like I mentioned, the Arizona Cardinals, who haven't really been floated as a potential Kirk Cousins landing spot, but they could certainly be interested. So the only way that Cousins won't play into any maneuvering in the top 10 is if he lands with the Vikings. I think teams will have to weigh, are they willing to pay Kirk Cousins $30 million a season, knowing what they're going to get? And that can be a really good quarterback, maybe not ever an elite quarterback. Or do they want a rookie quarterback on a fraction of the cost over the 4 or 5 year deal,
yeah,
who might have more long-term upside? And I think most of these quarterbacks do have more upside than Kirk Cousins. And you certainly have a lot more cap room to build around that younger quarterback than you would if you signed Cousins in free agency.
All right. While we're on the topic of quarterbacks, what about Baker Mayfield? How high is his ceiling?
His ceiling is probably Russell Wilson. I think he will need a very good situation to reach that ceiling. We usually don't see quarterbacks change that much once they enter the NFL. Usually strengths stay strengths and weaknesses stay weaknesses. Certainly a guy could, you know, improve his arm, get a little bit bigger and stronger. But in terms of accuracy and decision-making and pocket presence, you know, those quarterbacks that need development usually either take a very long time to mature in those areas or never do it at all. And I think Mayfield did show improvement as a passer this season. He was a lot more comfortable in the pocket and wasn't trying to improvise as much. I'm a little lower on him than the masses. I see a Case Keenum type of player who certainly was one of the better quarterbacks in the league this season on a good team. I think you need to have a good team around Case Keenum or around Baker Mayfield, a quality offensive line and good wide receivers, which he certainly had at Oklahoma. He's going to go in the first round. I have him as a early second round pick. So I don't really like him as much as everyone else, but he is certainly someone with, from the accuracy standpoint, is one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback in this class.
Hey, Chris, this just popped into my head. You know, the NFL is a copycat league. When things are going well for a team, other teams try to duplicate it. The Eagles just won a Super Bowl. Do you think teams are going to try to draft offensive players to mimic what the Eagles did this season in their run in the postseason?
Yeah, I think that will certainly be the case. And that does bode well for someone like Baker Mayfield. I think if he was coming into the league 5 or 6 years ago even, he would kind of be pigeonholed as that, you know, spread offense, wide open attack, that isn't really a pro style offense. But you're right, the Eagles were running a lot of concepts that we see to be very prevalent in the college game.
Right.
So that is one thing that is good for Baker Mayfield. There's not as much under center snaps. They're, you know, run pass option was kind of the term of the postseason in the Super Bowl, and Baker Mayfield ran a lot of those in college. And most of these quarterbacks, Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State, Lamar Jackson from Louisville, they all were kind of running something similar. So I do think we're kind of at a crossroads here between the pure pocket passers that are very familiar with those under center drops and reading the entire field. And then we have these new age quarterbacks that are reading one defender and making a decision whether to hand off the football or pass it. So that is why I think there's a little bit more receptiveness to Baker Mayfield coming into the NFL now, as there have been for some of these other Big 12 quarterbacks in the last decade.
All right, what about offensive linemen? We know the Colts have given up a lot of sacks and hits over the last couple of years. When will it be appropriate for teams to draft the top offensive linemen in this draft class?
Well, the top offensive lineman to me is Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame. During the season, I did a few mock drafts, and I would mock Quentin Nelson to the Colts when the Colts were picking somewhere between 5 and 8. A lot of people thought that that was too early for a guard. But to me, with that quick passing game that we're seeing to be so prevalent in the NFL today, your guards have to be really good because there are so many quality interior pass rushers. They're the closest defenders to the ball. So they're getting to the quarterback, you know, very quickly. So Quentin Nelson plays the guard position, but doesn't have any problems as a run blocker and is a very sturdy anchor in pass protection. The Colts do have a need at guard if they do move back a little bit and Bradley Chubb isn't there. Somewhere in that 7 to 12 range, I think Quentin Nelson would be a home run of a pick and would probably come with the Colts also getting extra draft picks, which would be huge for them building this roster.
All right, Chris, who needs to have a big combine? Combine is next week. Who really needs to put up some big numbers to help themselves?
I think Joshua Jackson out of Iowa, and he's someone that could be on the Colts radar because I think with Vontae Davis moving on and some other holes in their secondary, they could look at cornerback. That he's someone that is might be labeled by some as a one-year wonder. He only had one highly productive season at Iowa. But he has the size and the length to be that true number one outside cornerback. And he's really up against Minkah Fitzpatrick from Alabama to be the first cornerback picked, in my opinion. And some people like Minkah Fitzpatrick at safety. He played in the slot a lot. So I think if Joshua Jackson runs very well in the 40, probably something in the 4.45 range, he could catapult himself into the top 10 because he would check the box of the production and his film is great. And then he would check the box athletically. So he's someone that's kind of viewed as a mid first round pick, maybe a late first round pick. If he tests well, especially relative to Minkah Fitzpatrick, he could be someone that could go in the top 10 and be on the Colts radar.
Hey, Chris, final thing with you. Is the combine becoming less important maybe with, I mean, it's 2018, so much game tape available on all these guys. I mean, what's the value of the combine going forward?
Yeah, I think it kind of depends who those, you know, front office members and executives are. We are seeing a shift to a lot, you know, younger GMs, younger head coaches that have kind of been more receptive to this kind of analytics movement in football that we've seen over the past 5 to 10 years. I did mention the 40-yard dash with Joshua Jackson, but that is a drill that continues to be the most hyped. We see it on TV, but everything else from the broad jump, we don't even get to see on NFL Network, or I guess fans don't get to see the three cone drill or the short shuttle drill. And those, to me, are the best indicators of success at the NFL level. That's just, it's a great demonstration of explosiveness, the ability to change directions. I think that's a those two drills are great indicators of how athletic a player is. So it's not just running fast in the 40. I think all those explosive and agility drills are very important. So I think, if anything, it's becoming more important to more teams than it used to be a few decades ago.
All right, that is Chris Trapasso. Really good stuff, NFL draft writer from CBSSports.com. Chris, really appreciate the time and the insight, and I hope we can do it again soon as we get closer to the draft, if you don't mind.
Yes, definitely. Thank you very much.
And with that, that'll do it for a loaded podcast on a Friday. We talked about a lot. Vinatieri, his new special teams coach, some draft talk to close out. Have a great weekend coming up, and thanks for listening. And we'll do it again on Monday right here on the Colts Daily Update. Bye-bye.